Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Golden Hour, a podcast that celebrates Asian creativity in music. I'm your host, Charlene Kay. We have an amazing episode for you today. Our guest is the revolutionary, once-in-a-generation artist and drummer, my friend, Jess Bowen. So I actually went to high school with Jess in Scottsdale, Arizona in the early 2000s. She was friends with my younger sister, Leanne, because both of them were two grades below me. I saw Jess play drums at our high school talent show and Battle of the Bands, and like everyone else at school, I was like, who is this girl? I remember clocking that she was one of the only other Asian musicians I knew. She's Filipina, and even though we weren't friends back then, she was incredibly inspiring to me. And it was incredible also to see her ascent in the music world after high school. While in high school, she formed a band called The Somerset, which went on to blow up, and they were a huge part of the emo movement in the early 2000s. She dropped out of college to tour with them around the world, and 20 years later, The Somerset is still active. They just released their newest album, Blossom, last year. I really want any female-identifying musicians and instrumentalists to hear this episode, because Jess is such a trailblazer in this realm. She's an example of someone who defiantly paved her way in the face of extreme sexism at a time where being a drummer and a rock musician was a total boys' club, and let's face it, it still is, but it was worse back then. I am so happy and honored to share her story here today. So without further ado, here's my interview with Jess Bowen. Hello, Jess! How are you doing?
Oh my God. Hi, Charlene. I am doing amazing because I'm sitting here talking to you for the first time. Like, I feel like in our lives, even though we have technically known each other since high school.
I know. I have my hands over my face right now because for all of our listeners out there, Jess and I went to the same high school in Scottsdale, Arizona. We have so much in common. We've been running circles around each other across the country in our, 15 years of touring or something like that.
All over the world, honestly. We've been crossing, like, just missing each other.
I just want to start by saying what a big fan of yours I am and how exciting it's been to follow your career over the years, starting from the early 2000s pop punk culture in which birthed us, I want to say, and which you still thrive. But I think that there was a really distinct scene in Arizona for pop punk. There was the format, and that eventually turned into Fun. And All American Rejects and like Jimmy Eat World, like all came from Arizona.
Oh my God, you're just tugging at my heartstrings with all those band names. I'm like, those are all my faves. And like it was an incredible scene, right? Like we had a really good music scene in Arizona, and it was, I mean, it influenced me and my band, you know, like as young teens, it was like, that was, we wanted to be those bands and we wanted to do what they were doing. And it was like, we would stop at nothing until we could.
This is such a timely conversation to talk to you, somebody who actually had a very, the same experience as me going to concerts as a kid and like realizing that you loved music and that's something that you wanted to do. The new EP that I just came out with largely is about being evangelized by music and growing up in a very conservative Christian upbringing and then realizing that, oh, like music is my church, and sneaking out of the house, like with those little X's on my hands, and going to Taking Back Sunday concerts by myself and like being in the front row, like I was radicalized by music. Totally. And I want to know what your first experiences of music were in Arizona, and what was your first concert? What was your first like holy shit moment?
Oh my God. That's so funny. Cause I feel like someone just asked me this question the other day of like, what was your first concert? And that I hate to say that I actually don't remember exactly what it was, but I think I know that I like, there was two different concerts that one of it had to be one of those that was first, obviously. But I mean, I grew up loving music cause my dad was a drummer as well. And that's how I got into it. So of course, like music was always playing in the house and he, you know, we would go to shows together. So because of that, I think our first show together was Journey, the band Journey. Yeah. Like, don't stop.
Okay.
You know,
was this with the Filipino singer?
It was not with a Filipino singer because the Filipino singer, I think, joined in like 2000. It was like later 2000, I think. And I know that I would have seen Journey early 2000s, like maybe 2000 or 2001.
So you saw the OG lineup.
I think I saw the OG lineup. Yeah. Wow. Which is crazy. But yeah, I mean, my first concerts were those type of bands like Journey and like, I think we saw the Eagles, you know, that type of stuff. Cause that is largely a lot of the music I listened to at first were those bands because my dad really influenced me in that scene. But then, yeah, once I got into like, you know, my freshman year of high school, that was when we really started, like, I really got into, like, you know, Blink-182 and Green Day. Mm. And my band literally started as a Blink-182 and Green Day cover band. Like, yes. That's all we did. We wanted to play the school dances and stuff. So we're like, we're just going to learn these songs and play these covers.
Yes.
And yeah. And then, so then that's when I got into, like, I went to, like, Warped Tour. And then that's when I really knew, like, that was the scene that I was, like, in love with. Those were the shows that I wanted to go to. And I would go mm-hmm. see The Starting Line and The Academy and The Rocket Summer. Like, you know, just those bands really got, like, those were my favorites in high school.
And
the guys in my band, we all happened to love, you know, the same. We all loved the same music. So luckily we would be able to go to shows together and experience all of that together, which was really beautiful. And creating music together then after that, because it was like you saw these shows, you saw these bands on stage, and you would kind of take little things from what they would do and incorporate it into your own music.
Of course. You're making me so emotional thinking about all those bands that you just mentioned, because I just got a very clear image of the clip-on CD holder on the visor of my car that had all of those albums that you just mentioned.
Oh, absolutely. Same. Like, I'd have the clip on the visor plus a whole other book, right?
Yeah,
that you'd flip the albums, because there were just so many good ones. But yeah, I mean, God, that scene was just so influential, you know?
And then you guys went on to play Warped Tour. So what a full circle moment.
It was insane. Like, the first Warped Tour we did was with bands like The Rocket Summer. Like, I ended up becoming like friends with Bryce from The Rocket Summer, who was my idol. Like, I remember going to wait in line to meet him at his shows when I was younger. And it's like, I had to like keep my cool because I'm like, oh my God, now we're like actually here doing it. But I mean, of course I would tell them, like, you know, I look up to you. You're an influence. Like, everyone wants to hear, not everyone wants to hear it, but it's nice to hear that, right? Like, to be like, oh, you very much influenced our band who is now on tour with you. And I think that's probably a cool feeling to hear too.
And I'm sure that younger fans have told you that as well, that are starting out.
Yeah, which has been crazy. We're just on a tour called Sad Summerfest, which is kind of like the new Warped Tour. It kind of took over. In a way, it's a smaller scale. Like, there's only one stage and there's only, I think, 8 or 9 bands that play total. So it's all just on one stage, but it's kind of the new Warped Tour. It's an outdoor festival. But yeah, there were bands on that, that were actually playing above us, like a band called State Champs. And I got to talking with like all of them and we became really close friends, and they were like, just so you know, like, the Somerset was our, like, one of our favorite bands growing up. We used to listen to you guys all the time. We'd come to your shows, and their drummer came up to me, and I think he's literally like one of the best drummers I've ever seen. And he was like telling me how I influenced him as a drummer and how like I was one of his favorite drummers. And I'm like, this is insane to me, because I don't know. It's like obviously a very flattering feeling, but I'm like, wow, like, it's pretty crazy to like hear that, you know?
Yeah, but so earned. You're one of my favorite drummers.
Oh, stop.
Having listened to so many projects that you shaped, and knowing that our influences are very similar, like, I really hear the Travis Barker and the Dave Grohl influence.
Totally. Yeah. Thank you for saying that, actually, because those are legitimately two of my, like, when they say, who are your favorite drummers, it's always Travis Barker and like Dave Grohl or
yes. Have you ever run into them at festivals or seen them? I feel like your paths sort of crossed.
What's crazy is I literally like 1 degree of separation, but somehow we still haven't actually met mm-hmm. in person. And I've heard Dave Grohl, like I've had so many friends that have met him that have just said that he's the best person in the world. And I'm just like, I need to meet him at sometime before I die.
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
that is a goal. Like definitely Dave Grohl. And of course, Travis Barker, I would love to meet him too.
That's definitely only a matter of time.
I hope
you guys
so.
Play in the same circles. And emo is having such a resurgence right now with Machine Gun Kelly and Youngblood and Willow and all of those acts.
I know.
And Demi Lovato, like her whole new record is
Her whole new record
emo
is very
punk.
Much pop punk.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. It's cool. I love that it came back because for a while, you know, it wasn't about like actual instrumentation. Mm-hmm. You know, it felt like very much it became a very, you know, at least in the pop world, just very much everything was, you know, programmed. And as a drummer who like appreciates the sound of real drums and you know, there's something about playing drums where like everyone has a feel and everyone has a style.
Yeah.
And when you're just programming that on a computer, on a laptop, whatever it is, like you're completely missing the point of like you're going, yeah, for me as a drummer, it really drove me nuts for a while that was, and even our band did that for a bit where one of our albums completely, I didn't play drums on at all.
Wow.
Because we were like, even like kind of pressure from the labels kind of being like, this is where pop is going and this is what you guys have to do. And like, yes, I would play those parts live, but I would have to interpret whatever little sound was because it wasn't actually a snare drum or it wasn't actually a kick. You know what I mean? It's like you have to interpret those sounds and figure out how to do it live.
And the culture always sort of goes in a circle. And now we're at the point where live drums is cool. So jokes on them.
Yes. Live drums and like big guitars and stuff is cool again. So I'm happy about it.
Yeah. It's so funny because this exact topic was talked about in the Netflix documentary that you were in called Count Me In.
Yes, it
was. Is so good. And Jess is such a shining star. And I got to see her jam with Chad Smith of the Red Hot Chili Peppers and these other drum legends. I'm like dying to hear about your experience with that. And what was it like getting that call and that whole experience of filming and meeting these legends?
Yeah. Well, I will let you know right off the bat that was the most nervous I've literally been to do anything in my entire life. Was that scene at the end where I'm drumming with like Chad Smith and Stephen Perkins and Cindy Blackman.
You are beaming and you're crushing. Like it just, it's such a beautiful moment of these, like, it feels very tribal, not just because you're in a drum circle. It feels like all these people are kinfolk.
Yeah.
And you speak the same language. And everyone is just like fucking stoked. I just wanted to say how much your spirit shines through in that scene.
Thank you. I'm happy that you couldn't tell that I was nervous then. I hope, I guess
not
the beamingness was trying to cover up how nervous I was. But I mean, the whole experience was just crazy. To be honest with you, my manager at the time had sent me an email saying like, hey, there's a person that wants to like get in touch with you about interviewing you. So that's all I thought it was going to be an interview. And then I started talking to him. We started emailing back and forth and he was like, let's meet in person and I can tell you all about this project. So I was like, what's this? What do you mean this project? You know, so we meet up, we go to dinner one night and he explains that it is going to be a documentary and that they want to feature me in it. Like that I would kind of be you know, quote unquote character, I'd probably be the younger, like up and coming drummer. You know what I mean? I know. I use it in that term. So I'm like, yeah, it's a documentary, but they still are like, as a character, you would be this, you would fill this role, you know? I was just shocked because he named all these drummers that were going to be in it. And I was like, me though? Like you want me to be a part of this with all these drummers?
Hell yeah.
And it was so surreal. So
And how do they pair you off to do the drum off?
It actually was just a whole room of drums. So we were in the room where it was at the, what do you call it? The Jim Henson Studios in Hollywood, where Michael Jackson did the We Are the World You know what I'm talking about? But yeah, I think that with like all the people, all the iconic singers that you
can
think of.
So much history in that
space. So we did the drums in that room. And again, the reason why I was so nervous is because they basically were just like, all you guys are going to do is just play drums. We're just going to sit you down and just play. And I was like, you can't tell me to just play with these drummers that are A, like way better than me, and B, that I've like looked up to for my whole life.
Yeah.
Like, I'm like, that's so nerve-wracking.
You held your own. I have to defend your honor. You held your own, and it was so cool to see them reacting to you.
Thank you. Yeah, it was, like I said, still the most nervous. And when I look back and watch it and like that specific part, because I'm hard on myself, I like kind of cringe because I'm like, oh, like I feel like I could have done better. It was because I was nervous. But like at the end of the day, I am very proud of it. I'm proud to have been a part of it. I'm so happy that like, you know, to be 100% honest with you, I thought that I was going to back out because I was like my anxiety around doing that last part. I was like, I don't think I can do this. Like I really thought that I couldn't. I had imposter syndrome, you know, I was
absolutely.
Like, you know, it's like. Like I said, these are people that I have looked up to my entire life. I knew these people from when I was younger. They're just iconic drummers. And telling me to just go in a room and play drums with them, I had a complete imposter syndrome. I was like, I'm not good enough to do this. But you know what? I did it. So
you did, and you slayed. It must have been so much harder when you were younger as a teenage girl. In a predominantly white space to navigate that imposter syndrome and like figuring, like telling yourself that you deserve to belong and to take up space in a space where not very many people look like you or can relate to your experience. So I'm curious to hear about that and what it was like starting out and how that's evolved.
Yeah, totally. I really, really feel like, because I was in a band with all boys, and like you said, the scene that I was in was all men, I felt like I was constantly getting like overlooked, right? As being the female like member of the band. It was, and I made myself small, to be honest with you. Like now I'm a totally different person and I will not like accept, you know, I when our band got back together, it was with certain terms because I also went to therapy and I was like, I made myself feel small in this band because it was a time where it was all men and I was one of the only females always, like whether it was on tour or whether we were in the studio, whatever, it was like, I even felt like, actually bringing that up, even in the studio, I'd feel like my ideas with certain producers, they would overlook me because I was the girl in the band, you know?
And sometimes you weren't even on the records because they would program the drums.
Exactly. And that's the best example of it is just like, I didn't even have a choice. It wasn't like, hey, Jess, would you be okay with this? It was that choice was made for me. So it felt like a lot of times, like I didn't have a voice because I was a female and just, you know, again, it was a certain era where felt like, right. Where like, it was all about the men. It was a boys' club.
Totally. And
even on this last tour I just did, on the stage, on the actual stage, there were only like two people that were female at like any time. It would be me and then like a singer of one of the other bands was a female. And then the rest were all men. So in a sense, like I know it's gotten better, but I'm still like advocating all the time for like more females in these spaces, like hire more women because you know, it's also a visibility thing. Like if I were going, like when I was going to shows, I never saw women on stage besides Haley from Paramore, right? Mm-hmm. Like, so for me, it's like, I always want to advocate for just like, you have to fill those spaces with women so that it's a visibility thing. So people know that like it exists, you can do this, right?
Ugh.
Yeah. So, but yeah, like I definitely struggled with trying to figure out how to take up space, if that makes sense. Like realizing that like I it is unique that I am a female drummer and I think that that should be embraced and not like, don't make me feel small in a sense. Like I think it like was a bigger, it made our band stick out in a better way because there was a female in the band, you know?
Yeah.
I don't mean to, I'm not bashing the guys in my band by any means. It's just that was, I'm more so trying to say that that was just the culture, right? And mm-hmm. now everything has been so much better where it's 2022 and our band got back together. And I do feel like it's a, just a different time now. And men realize like, yeah, this is the time for women to shine, you know?
And you're an asset and you have more followers than the band does yeah. on the social accounts, which is fantastic. When you were growing up, were there any other female drummers that you saw, or were you kind of paving the way for yourself?
So the only ones that I knew of were Sheila E., and I didn't necessarily follow her as much. And when I say Sheila E., I knew her mostly as a percussionist. Right. I didn't actually know her behind the kit, you know? Yeah. So I kind of like she was an influence, but it mm-hmm. was in a different way. I'm like, okay, she's mostly doing percussion elements, which is cool. She's great. And then the only other one was Cindy Blackman when she was playing with Lenny Kravitz. Mm-hmm. So I didn't know any other female drummers. Those were like the only two that I felt like I like kind of saw in the media or like, yeah, like noticed. Yeah, yeah. But everyone else were guys, white
yeah.
guys.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Totally.
Mostly.
And your dad is a drummer.
He is, yeah.
So tell me about that. How did you get started and how was he encouraging of that?
Yeah. So, I mean, I feel like I did get lucky because my dad, you know, was a drummer. So most parents don't want to buy their kids a drum set. I mean, it's not mm-hmm. the most like melodic thing that you could teach your kids. You don't want to just hear banging all the time, right?
We had a drum kit in our house in Arizona and my mom, Leanne was learning the fill for Smells Like Teen Spirit.
Oh, yeah.
She was just constantly, dig-a-dig-a, and my mom did not like that Leanne had her legs spread at the kit because she thought it was unladylike.
Oh,
talk about an Asian mom, like, wanting to.
No, for sure. Like, legitimately, and this is why I feel lucky that I had my dad, because my dad's white. My mom's from the Philippines. My mom would not have wanted me to play drums. Like she really didn't. But I think because my dad was so like insistent upon it and we had a drum kit in the house, then she was kind of like allowed it almost. But she wasn't, she didn't want me to play drums. She's, you know, an Asian mother. She wanted me to like go to
play
school
violin.
And become, play violin, but also like, you know, go and become a doctor or something or a nurse, you know, like, but yeah, my dad, luckily I had him to kind of, he didn't force me, but he kind of conned me into it at first because I did want to play guitar. And so he was like, well, if you play drums in the school band for a year, then I'll buy you a guitar. So I did it. But
wow.
I mean, here I am now. That was in sixth or seventh grade. And now I'm turning 33. Still no guitar, Dad. So it was totally conned me into it. But I fell in love with it after, you know. So I think he knew what he's doing. He's like, just play for a year. And then, of course, I fell in love with it. And then started playing in the school jazz band and then started our band just actually formed in eighth grade. It was me and two of the brothers that I went to school with. And we just started playing in a garage, you know, and just playing together.
A
and
bribe.
Our together.
A life-changing bribe. Oh my
the
God.
Best bribe ever. Yeah.
That's a fantastic origin story. So how has your mom's opinion of your career changed as things as you've gotten more successful and as this has clearly become your life path and something that brings you so much joy?
Yeah, it's very interesting because like I said, and as you can relate, Asian moms don't want to see their daughters drop out of school. They don't want to see their daughters,
right. It's like
honestly,
the worst
even
nightmare.
Doing a music career and being with a bunch of boys all the time, right? Basically, my mom, when I dropped out of college, she hid all of this from her family in the Philippines. Like all of my family over there, like had no idea that I like had dropped out of school. They didn't know that I was really in a band or anything because I don't even think for herself she knew how to explain it, if that makes sense. Like she didn't know like, because like in the Philippines, I think they would just think, oh, that's just something you do for fun. Like, oh, she plays music. She's in a band. Oh, that's a hobby.
Exactly.
Yeah. Mm. So then I actually remember the shift was when our band, Filipino pride is like a thing. If people in the Philippines know that like you're Filipino and you're successful. Oh, yeah. Like, they jump on that bandwagon real hard, right? Yeah. So our band started getting a lot of attention in the Philippines.
Because
was half Filipino. Yeah. And I would talk about that on social media, right? I would tweet about being Filipino. And so I had a large like Filipino following, and our band did. And so the shift was when our band like basically got asked to go play in the Philippines, and we were playing. So my mom had to tell obviously my family like, well, Jess is going to be there because her band is coming. And they were all like, oh, okay. And then they came and saw like, I mean, those were the biggest shows we had played at that time. This was in like 2012 was the first time we went there. And there was like 10,000 people at the shows, like screaming for us, like waiting to like signs up that said like, Jess, like Mahal Kita, which means like, I love you. And like, you know, like I had specifically like huge like fans, like people just holding up signs and stuff for me over there. People were waiting at the airport for us. And so,
holy shit, that's like Beatles level.
That's the thing. I was like, oh my God, this is insane. It's like a whole level of like craziness. And I had like my own security guard and stuff. Like it was wild. So that was the moment that it shifted, because then my mom, because she obviously flew to the Philippines then because we were playing there. And she's like, well, I might as well come and visit my family. Mm-hmm. And the whole family came and saw this. Like my grandparents saw all the craziness. Oh. And that's when it just turned into like, they were so supportive, and my mom was proud then. It was like, oh, like she was able to be like, yeah, this is what Jess does now, you know, like because she had something to show them that made it seem real or whatever, you know, like because she didn't know how to explain it to them before. But that
was
just
wonderful. But it's also like, it's not enough that it makes me happy. Like, it has to be like the biggest public validation for you to spend.
Right. Okay, sure. Right. It couldn't just be like, hey, yeah, I'm having a good time doing this. Like, can't you just, can't that be enough? But, but yeah, so that it was
that must have felt good.
I mean, it did, because yeah, like I was always upset that my mom wasn't open about it. Cause I was like, you have to tell like, this is my family. Like I want my cousins and my aunts and uncles and my grandparents to know that this is what I'm doing.
Of course.
But yeah, so now they're like very supportive, and we still have, you know, a large fan base over there. So I'm constantly getting like, for me and my family, they call even like third cousins, like your first cousins. Right, so my family's like massive over there. They'll be like, hey, like your cousin so-and-so like wants you to record a video to say hi to them. They're big fans. And I'm like, cousin who? Like,
I don't even know. They're so extended.
So extended.
Just like everybody's an auntie or
everyone.
An uncle.
Yes. Yeah. And exactly. So in me and my brother actually talked about this the other day because it's just so funny. Like we grew up calling everyone Tita, like for that's an aunt. And then we didn't call them Tito. We just called them uncle. Mm-hmm. But yeah, we grew up calling all of our mom's like friends and stuff like Tita Pilar or like Uncle Steve. And so there was always this like confusion with like friends that would come over and they're like, how do you have so many relatives? I was like, oh, that's actually not a relative. That's that's actually just my mom's friend.
I love it though, because it's a term of endearment, and it's like this idea of chosen family. It's more than blood.
Like it's like a sign of respect too, right? Like it's like, okay, yeah, if we're calling you this, it's a respectful thing too. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You have a relationship with your family in the Philippines. How does that translate to you being an Asian American here and identifying with your heritage? And how did your relationship with your Filipino heritage evolve over the years?
Yeah, that's a great question. When I was younger, I think it was hard because I'm very white appearing, right? So most people had no idea that I was even half Asian. And so it was like, I felt like I had to justify it. Like I almost had to like prove like my Asian-ness, you know what I mean? Cause it was like for other Asians that I was friends with, it was like, I wasn't Asian enough. But then with like white people, like I'd be like, yeah, I'm half, like, it's like they couldn't accept it almost. I don't know. It was like this weird in between that because I was so white passing, it was like, it never really came up. Unless I brought it up, and then like, mm-hmm. unless I wanted to be like, yeah, I'm Filipino, you know? Mm-hmm. But I think it's just evolved in the sense that like, I mean, it's not like I ever tried to hide it, but now I just feel like I really want people to know. Like, I'm always like, you know, like even on my Instagram profile, I'm like, okay, I want to put like the Filipino flag on there so people know. And like when I do, I just had to fill out like a, for our publicist, they were like, you know, send us like an updated like bio and all this stuff. And one of the questions was like, any other fun facts? And I was like, I'm half Filipina. Like, you know, like I have to add it as like a quote unquote fun fact, because it's like, I don't know, like people don't know that about me. And I want them to. Like, I really, really love like the culture. Like, literally all of my mom's family lives over there. And I grew up going almost every other year up until high school. And then I would go, you know, maybe every 3 years or so. And I just feel like I identify so much with it. Like, it's like, it was part of my upbringing. Like I said, like I went almost every other year. And actually when I was born, my mom took me over there for like a year because she wanted like help, you know? Yeah. So like, and that's where her family was. So I went there when I was younger. The only thing is I just wish she would have taught me Tagalog. I can't speak Tagalog, and yeah, it really makes me upset.
Time to get on that Rosetta Stone on tour, on the bus.
I know, that's true. I could just learn it myself, I guess. I could try. But I mean, like, I understand it. We call it Taglish, right? Like in the Philippines, they speak Tagalog, but it's literally a mixture of like, they speak so much English that it's like a mixture of both. And it's just so funny because I'm like, I can totally understand it when they're speaking around me in Tagalog, but I just can't say it myself besides saying like mahal kita, which is I love you. That's the only thing I know how to say.
Well, that's the only thing you need to know how to say when you're
interacting
with fans and with your family. It's been so interesting to hear about the journeys of other mixed race friends that are also performers and even non-performers, of this like idea of code switching in between spaces. I've been thinking about that a lot and thinking about how a lot of mixed race folks do have this, again, sense of imposter syndrome, like they don't belong because they don't appear a certain way. And it's really important not to discount them as anything less than 100% white, 100% Filipino, instead of like, you are less Filipino because you aren't, you know, it's like this idea of like being pure blood or, you know,
totally.
to use a Harry Potter reference.
No, yeah, that's exactly it. It is the imposter syndrome of of like, yeah, not knowing where I really fit in. But like, yeah, and like you said, it's in certain rooms, like you would, if it's like, oh, if I'm around more Filipino people, I'm very much like, hey, like I know, when I, like, it's this thing where when I go out and I know that someone's Filipino, I want to like talk to them. I'm like, oh my gosh, I am too. But then I'm like, oh, like it feels weird sometimes. Like I've had conversations with people and I'd be like, oh my God, are you Filipino? And they're just like, yeah. And I'm like, okay, sorry that I asked, you know what I mean? And it's like, it's because I think they see me and they're like, why are you asking? Like, like because I don't look Filipino and I have to like try to justify like, oh no, like I'm half Filipino too. And like, this is why I wanted to talk to you. My mom's from Manila, all this, you know, like, it's like, I want to like relate to them, but I've had times where, it like kind of backfires where almost like they think I'm being racist or something by asking, you know, if they're Filipino. And I'm like, I have to be careful with that because I don't want it to be mistaken for something else ever. Totally. Obviously, no one does, but yeah, I don't know.
Well, thank you so much for sharing all of that. It's vulnerable to talk about. And I'm so happy that you felt comfortable enough to share your journey about that.
No, yeah, thank you. It's the first time I was able to, and it feels nice to talk about it. So yeah, thank you for letting me share.
I'm so glad. I want to talk about the summer set a little bit. You guys took a break in 2017 and you've just come out with part one of your two-part album, Blossom. Can you tell me about what led to the break and then what brought the band back together?
You know, the breakup was actually for the rest of us. And when I say the rest of us, I mean all of us that were not our singer. Our singer's name is Brian. It was a surprise. It was a shock. He our singer wanted to take a break, basically. He, we had a couple tours booked, actually. And I mean, he just decided, he said to us, this was in January of 2017, he just said, I don't want to do this anymore. I want to like prioritize my mental health and just like take a break from this. And, you know, it was just a shock because it didn't seem like anything was like really going wrong. There was no like, there was, it just felt like, oh, we were on a really good, you know, path. Like everything kind of just kept going up, and the tours that we were supposed to do that year were like pretty big tours. And so basically he told us he wanted to go on a break, and then it was so that he could, to be honest, I think he started a like his own project after that. So it was, that was also another, a shock, because it kind of felt more like, okay, that's probably more why you wanted to do it. And I just wish he was open about that. You know, like, let us know that's, if you wanted to do another project, like, that's fine. I just wish you were like transparent about it.
Totally. And also after the tours were booked, that's tough.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the thing, is I was really mad. I'll just be totally honest about it. Like, I was really upset because it just felt, you know, it was just a shock to all of us. So anyways, that he decided he didn't want to do it. So we went on a hiatus, and, you know, luckily the rest of us kind of went on to find our own identities as well. It at the end of the day, it ended up being the best thing that could have happened to us because of us being able to go off and do our own things for the first time, honestly, since we were all teenagers. We had been doing this band, specifically the Somerset, since, you know, 2007, and we were all, you know, 17, 18 years old. And we all had our identities wrapped in this one thing, right? And it was hard to realize that until we broke up. And then it was like, well, now what? And so we were all able to kind of like, we had to stand on our own 2 feet, and all of us had to individually figure out like, what is it, you know, that we're all going to do now outside of the Somerset? And, mm-hmm. You know, it was a struggle to kind of, for me at least, I didn't even think I was going to do music again. I kind of was like, I was like, you know what? I did the thing. We had a great career. Now that it's over, I think I'm just gonna, I was gonna go to like dental hygiene school or something. I had some crazy,
no. Yeah. Not you being a dentist.
That, like, image. Can you imagine? Like, what was I thinking? Like, no,
that would be a tragedy.
No, it would be like, can you imagine? Like, I went from like touring the world and like having the best time, like having the best life. And then I just like end up going and sitting and like looking into people's mouths.
Nope. I can't imagine it.
No,
I don't want to.
Yeah. I was like, why did I think that was a good idea? But that's just where my head was at, you know, mm-hmm. Like I really thought that I just needed to not do music anymore. And, but then luckily I started, like pretty immediately after, or maybe it was a couple months actually, but I got asked by certain artists to start playing with them. And that's when I was like, I've never really tried playing with other artists that weren't my own project. And then, so I kind of became a hired gun, and I ended up loving it still. You know, I was like, actually, this is kind of nice, because I have, like, it was in a different way that I started appreciating it. I was like, okay, I just get hired to literally go on stage and play the drums. That's kind of nice. I don't have to worry about the business side of the things, the marketing, like all the things that you're doing behind the scenes all the time when you're in a band. Then I don't have to worry about it. And I just get to go up here and have fun. And then I was playing with a lot of female artists, which I loved. Like, that was the other thing. I started playing with all these like women. And I just realized that was an amazing shift. I was like, oh, this can be fun again. Because now I'm like surrounded by women that like we're like-minded, and it's just like a different vibe than being with all guys all the time, you know? So
what a healthy breakup.
It was.
Temporarily.
It really was. And the rest, everyone else had their own, you know, projects that they were working on, and everyone was able to do what they wanted to do outside of the Somerset. And we all found ourselves like personally and professionally. And then we were able to come back together like healthier than we have ever been because of that, you know? So at the end of the day, when I say that I was like upset and shocked and all that stuff, it's like, yes, those were my feelings at the time and they were valid, but like I can look back on that. And in hindsight, I'm like, it literally was the best thing that could have happened to our band. So now everything has just been amazing. I mean, it's been really great being back together and just like having fun and appreciating every moment of it, and not taking it for granted, you know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's awesome to know that your first love, the Somerset, is still has such a strong fan base. And I was following you guys along on Instagram, and it's so clear, like these kids have grown up with you who are now our age or younger.
Yeah. Yeah. It's pretty wild to see. I mean, it makes me feel a little old at times, but you know, at the same time, like, you know, cause people at this last festival, I was just telling you about, you know, we were doing meet and greets every day, and it was honestly, I loved it because everyone was coming up to us and showing us these photos of us from like 10 years ago being like, oh, we've grown up with you guys. We've loved you so much. We were, you know, sad when you broke up, but we're happier here now. And like, I don't know, hearing that and then meeting like people would bring their kids. They're like, look it, I have a kid now. And I'm like, oh my God. Like, and they're like raising their kids on the Somerset. And I'm like, wow, are we going to be that band that when my parents would put on music, that I'd be like, no, mom, I don't want to listen to that. Or dad, turn that off. That's old stuff. You know, like, I don't want to listen to your music. I'm like, are we that band now?
Yeah. I just think the world of you, Jess, and I think that you're so brave and so talented, and I know the sky's the limit for you, and I can't wait to see what you do next.
Oh my God, thank you so much, and the feeling is mutual. I just have so much respect for you, and I was really stoked that we got to do this, so yeah, no, thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much again to Jess for joining us on the show today. You can find her on Instagram at Jess Bowen. Please subscribe, follow, and rate the podcast on whatever platform you listen to. Believe it or not, your engagement really, really helps us make the show better and gives us more visibility. We'd also love to hear your thoughts on any of these episodes. Tell us what you think about the show and who you'd like me to interview in future episodes. You can send us a message on Instagram at GoldenHourPod. Or email us at goldenhourwithk@gmail.com. Golden Hour is created by me and produced and edited by Dave Yin. Gabriel Hunter Chang is our production associate. Thank you so much for listening. See you next time.